roller skater. Just by saying that, you're probably immediately teleported to a time where these games took over your life, because from 1999 all the way till 2007, Neversoft developed this incredible series of games where you visited California, Mexico, space, New York, and even France, and a ton of other awesome locations. And even better than the game itself was the fact that you were accompanied by a near-perfect soundtrack that you're probably jamming in your head right now. As you're saying this, you're thinking to yourself, wait, which is the best Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game with the best soundtrack out there? So for this episode, we're going to be going back to the year 2000, the millennium people, the computer year, as we review Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 on another exciting episode of A Cast of the Past, where we publish a brand new episode each and every Sunday. My name is Juan Velez. I am from Puerto Rico, and joining me as always from London, Ontario, Keith Posha. Keith, do you remember the first time that you played a Tony Hawk game?
Not the specific year, but it would have been around 99, 2000. It would have been Tony Hawk Pro Skater 1 on the N64. Good times. I really enjoyed listening to that 30-second loop of Superman.
Right, oh, that was one of the big days. Differences. The PS1 game had like the full soundtrack. N64, it's like, well, we're going to give you the television commercial
here's a little bit of it. And if you like the song, you can just sit in a corner and listen to Superman over and over again, which is something I literally did for hours in that game.
Not complaining, though. Also joining us from Boston, Massachusetts, Mr. Ryan Michael McNulty. Mr. McNulty, which was your first Tony Hawk game?
It was the original one, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1. Played it at a friend's house for the Nintendo 64. I eventually got it for myself on the superior PS1. The PS1 versions were always the way to go for these games. But the original one that started it all, man.
This is going to be a fascinating discussion, because I think with a lot of other games, you know, we've talked about Resident Evil, and that has had its ups and downs, but Tony Hawk, it had its ups.
Ooh.
And then
boy, did it have its downs.
This ain't a roller
then
coaster.
Then it had its downhill jam, if you will.
Oh. See, this is where some people just stop listening to the podcast. But yeah, it seems like,
yes,
like towards around 2005, I want to say, with American Wasteland, which was one of the games that they still made, that's when people started going, oh, okay, so this is the thing now. Like, we just get these games every year, but it felt like every year it was this forced thing. But going all the way back to 99, 2000, it felt like if you
before
had a PS1 or N64, yeah, you had to have this game or at least played it at some point. Like, going back all the way to the days of school, how cool was it in school, Tony Hawk?
I mean, just growing up, at least for myself, skateboarding was the thing in general, where you saw it as you got older and older, that just the group of skaters got bigger and bigger. And then this Tony Hawk franchise was something for the people like myself who couldn't do an ollie to save their life, but they could still kind of be involved in that scene in the way that, okay, I can go home and play a skateboard video game and feel cool about it, but I can't really skate all that well. So I think that's really where the popularity of Tony Hawk came from back in the day, just the culture itself.
For me, it was kind of a like reverse of that, where I think this game is what impacted the culture, at least where I grew up, because of Tony Hawk 1. Skateboarding really blew up in my neighborhood. I started skateboarding, and my friends did, because of this game. Much like how Guitar Hero influenced me to start playing guitar. Sometimes people underestimate the power of a video game to get someone to go out into the real world and try it for themselves. And we started seeing more skate parks around the neighborhood and everything. And I think a huge part of that was the release of the Tony Hawk games, really bringing skateboarding as something that I think was popular in the 80s to becoming even more popular in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Side question. You mentioned that you were able to skate. What was the sickest trick that you could do?
The 900.
Let's put it this way.
Maybe the 9.
I never really got further than learning to do an ollie. So I could, all I right. think an ollie while in motion was like the best I could do.
I can't hate on that. You could do more than me. I could barely ollie standing still.
Yeah, I think I could still do it. I still got my skateboard. in my room somewhere.
Be careful what you say, Ryan.
Yeah.
This is being recorded. This is going on the internet.
It's like riding a bike. I don't think you can forget how to do an ollie.
Oh, well, yeah. We better see one, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we might have
now
to put that to the test. Some of my friends could do kickflips and stuff like that. I was so close to landing a heel flip, but it's pretty tough. And also dropping in on a half pipe, never successfully did it, but I remember trying it and just falling on my ass.
That just sounds frightening.
Yeah, because
like the idea of actually stepping in.
You got to lean in. So you put like the side of your board at the edge. You're looking down, even though, you know, you look at that half pipe before you climb up there. Look, you're like, oh, it's small, whatever. You go to the top of that. You're like, all of a sudden, that's like 100 feet tall.
It's terrifying.
And what you have to do is go against all your instincts and lean into the drop, which is just, I was never able to do it.
Two words. Hell no. I'm good. I'm good on that. So let's talk about the digital version of that with Tony Hawk. Any quick thoughts about the first one? Because I feel like whenever people talk about your favorite Tony Hawk game, depending on your age, that's going to shift. Usually it goes down to either 2, 4, or Thug 1 are some of the ones that I usually hear. But to talk about the second one, I feel like we need to dedicate at least 5 minutes to the original. How much fun did you guys have with that one back in the day?
Yeah, super enjoyed it back in the day. I think it's really hard to go back to at this point just because of all the things that they included in later Tony Hawk games, like when they included manuals and reverts and all of those things. You can really feel it going back to that old one, but you know, it was the concept that they really nailed just off the bat. I think that it's a great thing that they got away from the downhill levels in this game. I was never a big fan of those, especially that dam level in Tony Hawk 1. I hate it. But, you know, definitely a great starting point and still a great game.
Yeah, it was all about kind of finding that right balance of it's skateboarding, but it's also arcadey in the way to make it fun and want to do combos. Because even though, yeah, you can do things like the 900, I think the majority of tricks and stuff were stuff that was so over the top, you wouldn't typically see it if you actually went and watched like the X Games. But, it, you know, it's finding that balance of, oh, you know, hey, this is skateboarding, but it's also fun to play as a video game. Sometimes too much realism isn't as fun.
Yeah, I think that's very similar to me. Talking about the first one and the second one is that I forgot, because for me, Tony Hawk's Underground is maybe my favorite one of all time. And I assumed that when I was going to go back to this one, it was going to be about just as over the top and quick. And I forgot just how fast the Thug games are in comparison to this one. Like this and the first one seems so slow in comparison. And you forget, you know, the little things like the reverb and the manuals and the being able to jump off of walls. Like you assume that's always been in the Tony Hawk series. But then it's like, oh, wait, no, that was not a thing. Because then it later became about how many things can you do in a combo, right? Like how long can you do a combo? But I don't think the first two games in particular were like that. So talking about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, beginning with Mr. McNulty, how much did you love this game back in the day, and having played it now, is it just as enjoyable?
Back in the day, I did like this game a lot. I don't think it was my favorite one, and I was actually kind of surprised, you know, with a lot of the videos on YouTube, you know, kind of nostalgia looking back at the series, how many people consider 2 to be their favorite, because it never really was my favorite. I enjoyed it a lot, and I played the heck out of it. But I think I enjoyed 3 and Tony Hawk's Underground more. And like you, Juan, I consider Tony Hawk's Underground to be my favorite of all time in the series. But back then, like I said, I enjoyed it a lot. I think they upgraded a lot of things to make it an overall better experience. Going back now, there's definitely a few of those quality of life things that you miss. But it's still overall, there's some great levels in there.
What about you, Keith?
Yeah, Tony Hawk 2 was my... I'm in the camp of it was my favorite Tony Hawk for a very long time. I would say that my list goes like Underground 1, Tony Hawk 2, and then the rest of them. You remember the high points of the game, and I think this game has a lot of them as far as levels go. But going back, you kind of see that not all these levels were home runs. And I think that was my biggest takeaway from this time around. But even just like spending hours in the skate editor, that's something that I would do constantly back in the day. And it made me re-fall in love with Tony Hawk 2. And most importantly, the soundtrack of Tony Hawk 2.
Yeah, I think I'm in the same ballpark where this was never my favorite one, but I think if there's one word that defines the second one, it's potential. Because I think with the first one, it's like you had these games like 2 Extreme, 3 Extreme. Like, we forget just how many extreme games came out, right? So a lot of people probably saw the first one as, eh, whatever, this is just another one of those. But then 2 came out, and then you think about the soundtrack and the gameplay and the fact that they improved it, you know, in comparison to the first one. But I think that if you got to select, maybe objectively speaking, the best out of the pro skater, like not talking about Thug, all the way up until 4 felt so solid. I remember playing that online. I believe it was on the PS2. And I just love playing that game. But despite that, it doesn't really matter which one you play. You're going to get enjoyment out of it in 2019. Yet, you know, you got to be real. Graphically speaking, it's not going to be as beautiful. But Ryan, I actually have a thing before we talk about the chronology, because this game came out in a wide variety of platforms, and I think it's easy to forget. So could you list out a couple of the platforms that the second game is currently available on?
So, yeah, looking at the platforms, we got PlayStation, Microsoft Windows, there was a Game Boy Color Edition, it was on the Dreamcast, it was on Game Boy Advance, it was on Mac OS, Nintendo 64, and eventually released on iOS.
And there was actually another version. It's a different game because it has the X afterwards, but Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2X on the original Xbox. Mm-hmm. So that
and
is.
And there was an HD remake pack that on the 360 that featured this game as well.
Yeah, and I know, much like the Crash game, apparently the engine and the gravity in that game was very different. And I'm just going to say, because I know when you look at Game Boy and Game Boy Advance, some people are just going to say like, whatever, those were just really bad ones. Here's the thing. I played the GBA version more than the PS1 game, and it is just as good. The soundtrack is generic. The soundtrack is just generic GBA stuff, but just take a look. Just go to YouTube and type Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 GBA gameplay, and you will be surprised by just how good.
Oh, you're talking GBA, not Game Boy Color?
Yeah, GBA, yeah.
No, I did see the GBA one, and I was, for the time, I was like super impressed by it because GBA was relatively new, and you were just like, whoa, it's kind of like 3D on a handheld. This is crazy. It was more of a top-down view, but it was still pretty solid.
That was actually the first GBA game I played.
Yeah, the thing that separates the Tony Hawk games from like most other games is just how tight the controls feel. And I was one of those people that really kind of wrote off the GBA version. But Juan, you sold it on me when we were talking about this episode. And it really translates just how tight those Tony Hawk controls feel. And I think that's what like makes it a really good game. It's really worth a checkout.
So we've briefly touched up on some of the releases, but Keith, I'm going to give this one over to you, buddy. Could you point out the chronology of the Neversoft developed Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games? Because remember, Neversoft are the people that made this. Now, after 2007, you guys know that a ton of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games have come out since then. You know, we got 5, which came out. That is
apparently
a thing.
Just that is an abomination.
Yeah.
It is not good.
But it's not made by the same people. So what about these starting all the way in 1999, Mr. Poshak?
Yeah. 1999, we got Tony Hawk 1. Then pretty much every year after that, we got a new game. 2000 was Tony Hawk 2, 2001 was Tony Hawk 3, and that was kind of the in-between one of generations where you had the PS2 version, you had the GameCube, the Xbox, but you also had a weird PS1 offshoot,
PS1
like half
version. Yeah, I had the half version. They changed, like, Canada was one of the last levels, and then in the GameCube, like, PS2 version, Canada is like one of the early levels. So
in every way.
Yeah,
that
I
owned Canada level.
The PS1 version, played the hell out of that. Then when I eventually got a GameCube, I rented Tony Hawk 3 for GameCube. That's how much I was into Tony Hawk. Was like, I replayed it with the better experience where they had way more cool stuff going on.
And the frame rate, man, the difference is real.
Oh my God, yeah. It's crazy. And then, yeah, moving on to the rest of the Tony Hawk games in that generation. In 2002, we got Tony Hawk 4. 2003, that's when they switched over to Thug. You could finally get off the board. So Tony Hawk Pro or Underground 1 was 2003. 2004 was Thug 2. Then we moved into American Wasteland 2005, Downhill Jam in 2006, and then Proving Ground in 2007. And that was the last Neversoft-developed Tony Hawk game. You can pretty much point exactly where things went wrong.
And even from a naming standpoint, because notice like Underground 1 and 2. So there, they were saying, okay, yeah, this worked in the first one. Let's work on something else. Let's work on a sequel. But then 2005, American Wasteland, it's like, okay, what? So you're trying something, but that in 2006, you actually got two games. You got Downhill Jam on the Wii and Project 8.
Oh, yes, I miss Project 8.
And that game, I remember, it had so many glitches. Yeah. And then Proving Ground, and I guess the ground was so proven that Neversoft just had to back out of it.
I think that you can like directly correlate the fall of Tony Hawk games with the rise of popularity in Jackass. Whereas these games became more like Jackass or tried to be more like it, that's when things started going bad. And it really was around Thug 2 when that happened. Yeah. And that
I
was
never
kind
played
of the downhill.
Much of Thug 2, but most people say it was not nearly as good as Thug 1. And that's unfortunate.
It was a little too over the top.
It's the only game that has a Boston level, but it wasn't that great, apparently. I didn't play enough of it.
Canada. Woo! Well, look out.
You know what? Tony Hawk 3 is amazing. So
it
be,
is.
Be
it's
proud
really
of that.
That is true. That is true.
Yeah, I'll take that.
So as an opening statement, we actually have a quote here from an IGN review. Mr. McNulty, could you read it?
Yes. Yeah, so within that review, the quote was, "If I ever wind up stuck on a desert island with nothing but a PlayStation and a few select games, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 is one game I would definitely own."
And I think like this is the type of game, well, maybe not two, Keith, maybe not two, but I think that the genre and the type of game, considering soundtrack and the fact that there's free play, but there's a career mode and like, remember that Thug 1 was the first one where it was like a straight up actual career mode with a story and dialogue. Like when we talk all the way up until 4, a career mode is pretty much, hey, collect skate, Ollie the Bum, do this and do that, find the secret tape. Like that was the idea of a career mode. So talking about
Ollie
that.
It's Ollie the Magic Bum.
Sorry.
Please
sorry.
Get it right.
I do apologize, my friend. But talking about that in a career mode, how much fun did you guys have with the 1 and 2?
I honestly prefer this style of like Tony Hawk career mode opposed to the ones that we saw later in like Thug 1 and Thug 2 when it was more story cutscene based. Like, okay, here's a level, here's a playground, here are the challenges you need to do, tackle them as you see fit and just do your best, learn it until you get them all. I really like that style because the most important thing in the Tony Hawk games is the environments that you're in. They make or break the games, and just giving you the freedom to just explore these places within those 2-minute time frames, I love, and it's, as far as I'm concerned, the best part of that game.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy the goal-oriented kind of 2-minute time trial format. I also love the Thug 1 format. It really just kind of depends on what mood you're in. If you're in for more of a story-based game, or if you're in for just, hey, I want to just skate, do tricks, accomplish these goals under the time limit. So I think both formats are great, and it just really depends on whichever style you prefer playing at that given time.
There is nothing that feels better than just like you hit 3 challenges at the same time. Like say you get skate, you hit the high score, you hit the great score, you hit the pro score, just all in one run. There is nothing in video games that feels better than that.
It's pretty awesome.
I think that's
awesome
the most fun thing about it.
I was going to say, it's pretty awesome to watch, you know, the people that you know, there's obviously speed runs of this games where people can hit every single goal within the 2-minute trial.
It's insane.
And you're just like, damn, that's awesome. But that's really cool, just kind of figuring out what is the optimal path to achieve that.
And I think it's smart that they limit you to about 2 minutes, because if it was like five, then you have so much time that you don't feel the pressure, right? Yet I think that when you do career mode, it's like, okay, well, I already collected skate, and it's smart that you don't have to do all of them, right? You can choose to do the pro or the six score. And then each level, even though they always have the same tropes of like skate, you know, you beat the score, they always have a little bit something special that is unique to that level. And it always makes you figure out, what is it? Because it's not like maybe modern games that they give you an arrow and they say, well, this is exactly where you need to go. It's like, you know, Ollie, the magic bum. What?
That's better.
Yeah, thank you. See, I learned from my mistakes, man. But I forgot, like, what that was. You know, like, back in the day.
How would you forget just be that like, one? That, if,
no, no,
if
back
anything,
in the day. Not now.
Well, I was going to say, if anything, that is the most memorable goal in all of Tony Hawk 2, is Ollie the Magic Bum.
Remember, in my case, like, English at that point, we're talking all the way back in 2000, was mm-hmm. not my thing. So I didn't know what a bum was or what an ollie was. So it's like,
yeah, you didn't.
I don't know what the hell I got to do. So my progression back then was very poor. So being able to finally see levels that I had never seen before was kind of nice.
I will say some of those goal names were not very helpful, right?
No, they weren't.
Particularly Venice, actually. It's like, okay, tail slide the Venice ledge. Well, there's like 60 ledges in this damn place. Which one is the Venice ledge? And ultimately, I had to look it up. There was a few of these that you just got to look up, or you can just spend each 2 minutes like banging your head against the wall trying to find wherever the hell it is.
Yeah, so I guess for the conversation, let's list out some of the stages. So obviously, the first one, and I think this is the most important thing about the game, and you guys mentioned the differences with the PS1 game and the later one with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 3, but that first stage really helps sets the tone. Like, what is this game? You know, and the fact that with the first one, it's in the hangar, you get the helicopter, you get the chopper, and then you can grind that, and that causes him to fly off, and then you do this, and it breaks the wall down. I think it lets you know, hey, there's a lot of exploration in a game like this. And I don't think when you first look at it, it's that obvious. You know, the first one is Hangar, then we get School 2, then, the Marseille? How do you say that?
You're asking the wrong people.
France. I believe that is in France. So we'll say that. Then we go to New York City.
We'll just call it France.
Yeah. Then we go to New York City, which I hated that stage. I thought it was kind of boring, honestly. Then Venice, then Philadelphia. Then we head over to Mexico, and then you get some unlockable stuff in Hawaii, and hell, you go to outer space. So, my question to you right now, and this is the big one, favorite stage?
That's a tough one. I think I'm going to have to go with the last stage of the main career, the bull ring in Mexico, mostly because that...
The
just
loop.
Executed, yeah, with the loop. It executed so well on feeling like one of those skate competition areas, and there's like just different areas where you can really make your style of like skate. Like if you prefer to grind, there's an entire ring that you can grind around. If you just prefer to use the half pipe, you can just get a top score in the half pipe there. It really shows off the best of the game mechanics. And yeah, I would say the bull ring, or just for crazy level, I would have to go with the hangar, because they really start that game off in an incredible way, where I would argue until you get to Skater Heaven in outer space, that is the most over-the-top level in the game, where you're like, you're grinding on a helicopter and it's taking off and you're taking down walls and going into secret areas. They really just started off on a strong foot in that hangar as well.
I was always a big fan as a kid of, like Keith, the bull ring. I remember just trying so hard to unlock it because I was like, I want to do that loop. It's so cool. And then you do the loop and it's not really that amazing. but I remember also really loving, and I think we forgot to list it, was it like Venturis or whatever, was like the second metal competition. I forget where it actually is, but that skate park,
I think it's not here,
level. I did really enjoy that one.
That is really good too.
Going back, I would probably say Venice is my favorite level. I think it just has a lot of cool places to do combos, and it's just super memorable with a lot of the tasks, even if some of them are complete BS.
Dude,
But yeah, definitely. Yeah, I know the VB transfers. I had a lot of trouble on that too.
The worst challenge in the game.
That was one I didn't go back till later. And because I'll tell you one thing, to take it aside from the levels for a moment, I totally forgot you could improve your stats in this game until.
Oh, that sucks.
So I was playing as Rodney Mullen, who does not have good air. So I was struggling. Once I got to Philadelphia, there were some things that I was like, I don't know if I can do this. I don't think I have enough air to get up to like drain the water or whatever.
So did you not spend any of your money then?
I didn't do it until I got to Philadelphia. I did everything with base stats until Philadelphia.
Wow. That's actually impressive.
Yeah. Then I boosted the crap out of all my stats and I went back and did the VB transfers in Venice because I didn't have enough air to make that first gap. Over to the right in Venice for the VB transfers, so I had to go back and do it later.
I did a lot of yelling in that one, but for me, yeah, I think that Venice is by far my favorite stage, despite the fact that it's the most frustrating because, okay, school too. I think that for whatever reason, and I want to have this discussion with you guys, whenever people think about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, like, that is the only stage, maybe with the exception of Hangar, because it's the first one.
Yeah.
But that's the stage that everybody's like, Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2. They automatically go to
that
one.
I think Venice is up there, too. If I were to say top three memorable stages of Tony Hawk 2, it's Hangar, School 2, and Venice.
Yeah. I don't know. I've never understood that. To me, School 2 is just an extremely overrated stage. Like, it's fun for grinding, I guess.
Yeah.
But, like, especially the challenges.
The draw distance, dude. Oh, it's School 2 is it's horrid.
And maybe it's just that I'm not good at them, but wall riding those bells in School 2 is one of my least favorite challenges. It's terrible. Mm.
Oh,
and I think
dude.
It's more because if you go to Hangar is more of a half pipe stage, and then you go to the School 2 one, which is, like you said, Keith,
it's a
more
street
grindy.
Skate type of stage.
But it's kind of empty.
Oh, yeah, it is, surprisingly. But the thing is, I 100%ed the first two levels, and getting all the cash in School 2 is a pain in the ass. There is some BS ones. Because that first bell that you wall ride, I was trying to... You have to like wall ride and then like grind up to this other level.
The top part.
Yeah, and then you break through the window. Yeah, there was some BS money up there that you had to then like make it across a couple of gaps and then get this like other money that's hanging in between that and another trailer thing.
No thanks.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
So, School 2, any last thoughts about why people remember it so much? Because, like, it always bugs me. It always annoys me.
Because it had the leap of faith, probably, which is an actual thing in skateboarding. It's a part of an actual school, so it's related to that. Plus, I think people really like when they discovered where the secret tape is. There's that hidden area in the back. So I think people really enjoyed anytime there was this cool little area that you can find. Again, I struggled to get the secret tape in School 2 because if you don't have a lot of air, that one's a pain in the ass to get to.
I imagine as much.
Yeah, I never got the one in Venice.
Oh, really?
I tried really hard.
Yeah, you'd need to do some BS where you
that's
like...
That's on the X, right?
In Venice, you have to do that stupid like pop-up thing on those.
I can never do that.
Because I tried from the rooftop. I tried from the rooftop to get to it, but I didn't have enough air. But then I looked up that if you do like a boneless right in front of those little things on the ground, you pop up like super high in the air.
Oh, that's handy.
And you can get it. You have to hit it at the exact right angle. It took me forever to get it.
That would have helped me a lot in Philadelphia. But we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
Yeah, but just as a closing thought about Venice, I think that out of all the stages, it felt the most complete to me from a personality standpoint. Because I think that every other stage, like, it felt like this is a big area, but it's kind of empty. With school, New York, I thought was boring. I thought that the setting, it didn't represent school.
New York is the worst level in the
game. Yeah, it is horrible.
I'll put it this way. The two levels that I saw where I was like, ugh. Was definitely New York and Philadelphia.
Yeah, agreed. But yeah, I agree with you guys. I think that the bull ring, and it's nice that in the story mode, it's the last one. It's just like, have fun. You know, here's everything that you've learned, and it says a lot about level design, which is, if you like grindy stuff, you get this. If you want to fly, you get that option as well. But I feel like as time went by, the Tony Hawk games became a lot better, especially with Thug. Like Thug, it didn't matter where you started. It felt like you could always keep a combo going. Where in here, you could definitely feel like, well, you're not going to get too much done here, so maybe move around, especially in the stages like the competition ones were my favorite because admittedly they were the easier ones. Like you don't really got to think too hard, but I would always just go to the same area, just try to get a higher score. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, because they're basically skate parks, so there's a lot more skater-friendly stuff in there. You get a bunch of half pipes, and then you get plenty of rails and stuff, so it's a lot easier to combo. Although, I didn't get gold on any of the competitions. I thought it really? Was pretty tough.
I got number two.
Did you go back and try after upgrading your stats? Because I got a gold on all three.
No, I probably should have, but I didn't. I actually am not a huge fan of the metal ones as much as I used to be because I get so annoyed if I fall once, I just got to reset. There's a lot of, I mean, I do that a ton already in the game, especially trying to go for like six scores and stuff. There's a lot of start and retries in Tony Hawk games. It's part of the way it goes.
I remember with the first skate game, which I guess maybe at the end, if we want to, we can talk about that. But when the demo came out for that, the first thing people said is there a reset button or like how many times can I restart it? Because I think that's the thing. This game makes you a perfectionist because I was the same. If I want to get to the 100,000 score and I see that I got a minute left and I'm 40,000, I don't wait for time to run out. I hit restart and I've tried to figure out the best combination that I could. And starting first with you, Ryan, I think you mentioned who you played as, but which skater did you choose?
That was Rodney Mullen, who was definitely one of my favorites playing through some of the earlier games as well. Basically, just you look at his skate video that you get at, you know, once you 100%, which I didn't do, but I totally used the cheat so I could watch them all. And I'm pretty sure as a kid, I never 100%ed any character either.
No, you don't need to 100% it. You just need the three gold medals to unlock their
really?
Video.
Okay, that's what it was. I still don't think I ever got that. I'm pretty sure as a kid, I just cheated my ass off too. But either way, Rodney Mullen's video by far to me is the most impressive. And he's like one of the big innovators of skateboarding. I'm pretty sure he invented the ollie, but I'll correct myself in editing if I was wrong on that, at least on the video version. But yeah, the fact that he does stuff like it's like a Casper manual or something where he basically flips the board upside down and he's like grinding on like the bottom part of the board, and he just does all these crazy things that you didn't think were possible in skateboarding. It's just insane. So he was one of my favorites, and he's got one of his specials is a manual, like that Casper manual or whatever.
That's how you get those points, baby.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet. Not most characters don't have a special as a manual, so it's pretty sweet.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Keith?
I played as old Bobby B, Bob Burnquist, mostly because I liked his hat. But for me, I always, like, the first thing I do when I play the Tony Hawk games is I don't spend my money on stats. I spend the money on the specials that I like to use. So I honestly, at this point, can't tell you what specials Bob starts with, because I'll immediately switch it to, like,
grind. I know he had that.
Yeah, you have that, and that's true. I kept that one, but like I'll immediately switch it to like the dark side, or the dark slide is my favorite grind, so I immediately bought that. I gave him the 900 and then maxed out my air after that. I'm very min-maxy and like to alter the skaters to the way I enjoy it. So really, it's nothing more than an avatar to me. Like I'll pick the character I like or the deck I like, and that's where it kind of ends.
See, my answer is nowhere near as fun because it's Tony Hawk's pro skater, so I played as Tony Hawk. He is a pro skater.
Because he's a pro skater. Yeah.
Exactly. I didn't know because I didn't know about the skate movement. It wasn't up until I started watching Jackass and stuff like that years later where you saw some of the people be involved in the games. It's like, hey, I recognize that name. So I guess I'll also play as that character. And I think it is time, my friends, because anybody that is listening or watching this episode and you play these games, Like the gameplay, that's cool. That's like a nice side thing to the meat and potatoes of the Tony Hawk game, which is the soundtrack. And I feel like
so good.
To this day, many of us possibly listen to a lot of the music that we do now, thanks to the result of games like the WWE games, Tony Hawk games, a lot of the extreme sports games. So, Mr. McNulty, could you list out the beautiful and perhaps objectively the best soundtrack in a Tony Hawk game?
All right. Wow. We got a lot to list here. So we got, most famously, Rage Against the Machine, Guerrilla Radio, which was also the intro song. You got Bad Religion, You, Anthrax, and Public Enemy in Bring the Noise, also used in a few other games like Day of Reckoning for WWE. You got Power Man 5000, WWE also used this one, When Worlds Collide. Naughty by Nature, Pin the Tail on the Donkey, Papa Roach, Blood Brothers, The High and Mighty, B-Boy Document, Consumed, Heavy Metal Winner, Dub Pistols, Cyclone, Swingin' Udders, great name, Five Lessons Learned, Styles of Beyond, Subculture, Melancoin, No Cigar, Alley Life featuring Black Planet, Out with the Old, Lagwagon, May 16, and Fu Manchu, Evil Eye.
I just love these names.
Yeah. Nothing beats those Swingin' Udders.
Yeah. And now, okay, this is, if I think selecting a stage was difficult, this could be even harder. So starting with Keith, favorite song in the game.
Well, that's easy. It's not actually easy. I was going to say When Worlds Collide, but Guerrilla Radio is also really good. When playing the game, like, two categories here. I think you have to separate it into song you would go and listen to right now and song that fits the game best. I think When Worlds Collide is the game, or the song that fits the game best. Like, you're starting that 2-minute run, you hear that, what is it really? What's going on here? And you're like, yeah, let's go. But I would say Guerrilla Radio is the best song on the entire soundtrack.
See, a lot of these ones, When Worlds Collide, Bring the Noise, and Guerrilla Radio, those are all ones that are pretty famous even outside the game. So obviously those are going to top a lot of people's lists. Probably my favorite is Bring the Noise. I'm a big Rage Against the Machine fan,
yeah,
but I like more of their other songs compared to Guerrilla Radio. But yeah,
Bring the Noise
is
a really good song. God, I love that song.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anthrax,
that's actually
Public
my
Enemy,
favorite as well.
Best probably metal to rap combo song ever. But as far as like other ones outside those top ones, probably the one I found myself enjoying the most was Cyclone.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
That and Out with the Old, those were ones I felt like I heard the most playing through the game again. I feel like, no, you know, whoever plays this game, they're always like, oh, my game always plays this song more than like any other song. So those are the ones I heard the most and kind of stuck with me.
I think we talked about this with Grand Theft Auto 3, and the same can be said about this, which is there's the game, and then there's how much better does the soundtrack make the game. So my question to you guys, starting first with Ryan, is say hypothetically we get the exact same game, but instead of this beautiful soundtrack, you just get generic rock. Do you think we'd still be talking about the Tony Hawk series, because we're applying this to all of them, as much as we do now?
No, I don't think it would be the same way. And especially like the soundtrack for Tony Hawk 1, I think really was what set the stage. And there's a ton of memorable songs in that one too. And I think that also opened it up for them to get even, you know, higher reputable bands like Rage Against the Machine for the second game. So absolutely the soundtrack had just as much to do with this series taking off as the actual gameplay itself. You know, it's greater than the sum of their parts, you know?
Yeah, I agree. And the fact that people still talk about the Tony Hawk, I would say people talk about the Tony Hawk 2 soundtrack more than the video game itself these days is a test and just proves how important it was for this game to really hit the mainstream.
Yeah, I think another game that people always talk about the soundtrack is Crazy Taxi. What is the first thing that you think about when I say that?
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I don't know if you guys remember, this happened a couple of years ago. I think it was iOS. The game came out. they changed the soundtrack.
Oh, and yeah.
I mean,
there's a reason why I forgot it came out on iOS until I'm reading the show notes right now.
They literally had to patch the game in and get the licensing rights to the song.
That's
because
great.
People were boycotting the game. It's still the same game. So just think about that. And then the other thing is that, sure, you know, way back in the day, gaming is not as mainstream as it is now. So even think about your PlayStation Classic. I'd say that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 was at the top of the food chain of, how come this is not in the PlayStation Classic? Well, Ryan just listed over 10 reasons why. Because back in the day, the companies aren't thinking about, well, when they sell this game digitally, you know, we're still going to have the licensing rights to the song. So that's why you don't see things like this, like Gran Turismo and other games show up in something like this. So how important do you think it is for video game preservation that this game is probably never, ever going to be re-released in its original form? Like, unless you buy it, like, I don't even know if the iOS version and stuff like that have the original soundtrack. How big of a deal is that for you?
I do think it's a big deal, because I needed to look it up after hearing you talk about it, because even in the HD remaster that wasn't received well, that came out for the Xbox 360, they only had a minimal amount of the original soundtrack, and it just wouldn't be the same without hearing those same songs. Maybe it's a nostalgia thing, maybe it's a matter of if you didn't grow up with it, it's okay, but I just think that the songs are so fundamental to the experience itself that not having them does take away from it. And, you know, it is kind of unfortunate as far as a gameplay or like a preservation of game standpoint, because when you start throwing in these licensed tracks, it becomes harder and harder for it to be re-released. So you just kind of have to hope that the data for the original game never goes away. So maybe it ends up being a detriment at the end of the day, even though it's so vital to the experience, just because of a preservation thing.
You know, I'm not really too worried about it, because at the end of the day, I think, since, you know, it's very hard to get, you know, original working NESs and old NES games. But I think as time has gone on, we've got better at preserving PS1 and things like that. So it's a lot easier for you to go back and play a PS1 game and things like that. And in fact, for like $9, I picked up the original PS1 Tony Hawk. And because I have my PS3, the old 60 gig one. The old 60 gig.
I'm amazed
Sherman
that thing
still
is still
chugging along, and it can play PS2 and PS1 games. So I'm able to play it, and it's pretty awesome. So I think it's not as hard for you to find the N64 or the PlayStation version for a reasonable amount of money compared to what it used to be. People know that there's that nostalgia, so a lot of people hang on to their games now. I really don't want to throw out any more video games anymore, because I've regretted trading in so many games to GameStop that I know there may be a time, you don't know it yet, but there may be a time when you want to go back and play a game, and it's happened so many times that I know now, just hang on to your games, because it's worth it. And there's always somebody out there that also hung on to it in case you didn't, so there's probably a way to get it.
Yeah, something that Ryan mentioned that's really important is anybody that has a PlayStation 3 obviously plays PS3 games, but all of them, and I do mean 100% of the PS3s, play PS1 games. So maybe you didn't know about that, because, you know, there was this whole debacle of the original PS3, which Ryan has one, and I hate him for it, where you can play PS1, 2, and 3. And Ryan, can you do me a favor, buddy?
Yeah.
In the next week, on our Twitter, Cast of the Past, publish a video, because people need to hear your goddamn PlayStation 3,
man. It's not that
bad,
because I literally take a vacuum and put it up, the hose, to vacuum the dust out of it. But
that's
at
amazing.
One point, it did get so loud and had shut off for overheating. But if you vacuum the dust out, it's been working good. It gets.
How is that thing still alive?
I don't
that
know.
That thing is a trooper.
It's a
damn
trooper.
Is it over 10 years old at this point? It would have
I think
to be,
so.
Like
it's 2006. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's over 10 years old.
Keith, can you do me a favor? Go to eBay and check how much a fat PS3 goes for.
60 gigs. Yeah. 60 gigs.
Yeah, 60 gigs.
On it.
Yeah, so while we do that, Ryan, talk to me about perhaps your favorite thing in 2019. I think that whenever we talk about PS1 games, and I think we mentioned this a few episodes ago, like, this is the generation where you're afraid of going back, right? Because it's the transition to a 3D. But going back to a game like this, I'd say there's more good than bad about it. So what was your favorite thing about it?
So going back, I would say my favorite thing was just being able to just play and do combos Tony Hawk style. You know, that's just fun. Figuring out the route. I know Philadelphia aesthetically I thought was pretty gross looking, but I remember trying to get...
In the game or real life?
In the game. I've actually not been
to Philadelphia, by the way.
I've not been... I'm talking specifically the game. I haven't been to Philadelphia, so I can't comment. But in the game, I thought aesthetically the level looked bad, but it is a good place to do combos. There's a lot of great ledges and things like that. So I think just being able to... You kind of map out your route for how you're going to get the 6 score and just retrying until you get it exactly the way you want it and just getting these amazing combos. I think that is like the essence of Tony Hawk, because when you're trying to get skate and some of these other things, it's not as fun because you're not focusing at all on doing the tricks and the sweet combos. You're literally just skating around and having to like stop your board and like move in either direction and like desperately breaking to not fall off something that you're trying to get to or whatever.
I disagree with that, just specifically with the skate letters, like the way that they lay them out, it's all in
they
a perfect
usually
line.
Do fall in a line, but some of the other things are a little more kind of all over the place. And I'm not always gonna combo in a great way to be able to get the letters perfectly, so sometimes you kind of fall off track.
I'm gonna say that's on you.
Yeah, it is on me, but I'm just saying I like just doing the straight combos more than anything else.
Keith, any word on the price of that fat PS3?
Yes. According on eBay right now, they're going for around $352 for a refurbished one. Or if you want to pick up a brand new in-box launch PS3, I'm going to let you guys guess. How much do you think that's going for right now?
I'm going to guess $4,000.
All right. I'm going to say like $2,500.
$8,000 for an in-box launch
Ryan,
PS3.
Ryan, yeah. Do this. And I'm not anybody listening and watching, I will completely deny this. Ryan, get like the best quality box that you can find. Vacuum the hell out of that PS3. You sell that and you buy some of the refurbished ones and send them to us.
I don't know. I think Juan's ears perked up a little bit when he heard $352. Like, he's thinking about getting one.
Man. You know, no honestly, how hard it's about to play PS2.
It's the best way to play PS2 games.
Yeah, like, I have 4 PlayStation 2s, including a slim one. 3 of them have gone bad on me. I don't know what I do with them, but it just happens, man. So, Keith, now that you've given this information about this fat man, I really want one now. Tell me your favorite thing about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2.
My favorite thing about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2, it has to be the level design and just how much life that the levels bring to the game. Like I said earlier, when the levels feel great and you're getting those lines, you're getting those combos, that's what makes Tony Hawk 2 so memorable. And when they hit, and you really do feel it when they don't, because New York is by far the worst level in the game. I'm not a big fan of France really either. And when the challenges get hard at the end of the game, that's when I started feeling the slog of it, especially in Philadelphia. Like, I almost quit playing this game in Philadelphia, but just the way that the game just has so much life to it. Even back in the, with the limitations of the PS1, how there was cars driving around and you'd have to watch out for them in some of the levels.
The pooping bull.
Yeah, the pooping bull, which I didn't realize until later on that if you go through the poop, you lose points. Screwed me over. And it was a bad time, but just all of the life that they squeeze into every single one of those levels is easily the best thing and my favorite thing about the game.
For me, my favorite thing has to be that going all the way back to Grand Theft Auto 3, like all three of us collectively agree that game is awesome. That being said, I played the PS2 one And the entire time that I played it, I felt like I was playing a PS2 game, and not in a good way, right? It felt like, okay, Juan, understand the point and place and time. But while I was playing this game, I forgot that I was playing a PS1 game. I was just having fun, like especially in the California stage. At one point, I actually paused and realized that, like, hey, I'm not playing this like thinking, ah, it's a PS1 game, it looks ugly. I was having so much fun that I felt disconnected from the world because I was enjoying the level design that you mentioned, Keith. I was enjoying the soundtrack. I was enjoying the challenge of like, okay, I can technically continue to progress to the next level, but I want to get the pro score. I want to get to at least 100,000. I don't want to be a failure. And I think that a lot of the Tony Hawk games like give you that vibe and that feel. And yeah, the fact that this is a PS1 game and I never felt like I was playing a PS1 game, like sure,
it had a couple of features.
Well, let me finish my point. I'm interested in hearing that. Like, and maybe this will kind of be the gateway here. The only thing that made it feel dated, and it's nothing against this game, is like I forgot how many things were implemented in 4 and 3. And then every now and then I had to adjust myself, right? To like, mm-hmm. okay, right, yeah. This feature did not yet exist. But once I got past that, I was good. So Ryan, what's your counterpoint about the things that maybe don't hold up about this game?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the draw distance was, it wasn't a factor in many levels. Only really school did I think it was absurdly bad. But I think for me, the biggest thing that really aged it is I found it very, very difficult to play using the analog stick. Like I had to use the D-pad.
I didn't even think about playing it with the analog stick.
Yeah, the fact that I had to use the D-pad to make sure I was getting the right combos was really the most annoying part of the game. And it took me a while to adjust to that. My thumb kept wanting to go to that analog stick, and I had to really fight that. But for the most part, yeah, compared to GTA 3, this game has aged a lot better. I agree with you there. Just kind of a funny side note is I remember as a kid watching those videos, the skate videos at the end, and thinking like, oh man, this is awesome. They got like real life footage. And now going back and watching those, I'm like, holy pixelated video, man. Like, yep. Holy crap. I didn't really.
Video quality
time,
got good.
Yeah, at the time, it looked so beautiful. Now it's just like so blocky and terrible.
Yeah, and you forget, like, we used to play this in CRTs. And it is worth pointing out that you guys talk about the draw distance. The three of us, just to reconfirm, we played the PS1 version. But yeah, I know that the Dreamcast version is considered to be like the definitive one. And the Xbox one is pretty good as well. And I believe the N64 game looks muddier, but has better draw distance. So it's interesting, right? Like
but
a lot
they
of people.
Never at least in the first one, they didn't. The N64 ones didn't have real footage, right?
I don't believe so. I mean,
I don't
look
know
at
about
WWE
the second
controversy
one.
On the N64. I highly doubt that ever happened. That was like a PS1 thing. Even going to like a wrestling game like WCW Thunder, N64, it didn't have any footage because, I mean, it was like a 20 megabyte game on the N64. Like, think about that for everybody watching and listening that maybe you don't do a lot of emulation. If there's one thing that's fascinating about the emulation scene is that you learn about the behind-the-scenes stuff, right? Like a PlayStation 1 disc fit around 700 megabytes of data, whereas an N64 cartridge, like the highest ones that I've seen are like 32 megabytes.
Jesus.
So just think about the fact that some games...
And you needed to buy an expansion pack for that, because just so you had the right amount of memory.
Yeah. So just think about this, and this is fascinating. There's a lot of videos on YouTube, you know, that compare PlayStation 1 to N64 version of games. And just from like a size standpoint, you assume PS1 is the better running one, right? But because it's a disc, and discs weren't read as fast as they are now... Usually, the N64 version of the games have better frame rate, better draw distance, but the PS1 games look better, although because they were so pixely, people kind of preferred N64 because it was like a little bit smoother. Mm-hmm. So it's always interesting to see that.
But usually N64 would have less content sometimes. They would have to cut things out.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to... or let me try that again. Earlier, we talked about how beneficial the soundtrack is to that game. Compare the N64 version to the PlayStation 1 version, where you only have a very small sample of each song, and how repetitive and repetitious it gets, and how like grating that basically gets. Like, that's the biggest difference of between the two versions, why people would say that the PS1 version is superior.
So what would you guys say definitely does not hold up in 2019 with this game? Is it the graphics? Is it, Ryan talked about maybe the limiting factor, the movement isn't as fluid?
Well, to continue the point that I just made, that was the part of the game that really got to me the most that I couldn't stand. And I'm assuming it's because of the limitations of what the PS1 could do. But the fact that when you're going through the career mode and every time you retry, you start a new song over from the beginning and it doesn't continue what you're currently listening to. By the end of that game, that drove me crazy. When I was going through, it was Philly, the part that really killed me, when I was trying to get that perfect line for to get skate, because I had a problem with like going up that lip or that lip and getting the K, I would have to retry over and over and over again.
Was so freaking on the awning. Ugh.
Yeah. So I probably heard the first 20 seconds of every song in that game at least 10 times, and then going from that to trying to grind that giant rail to turn off the fountain and making sure I had enough speed and then stopping halfway and then retrying so I could try and get more speed.
A crazy amount of air, you can pop up there from the ledge right in front of it.
I didn't know that.
But you need a lot of it. I had to like max out my stats to be able to get up there. Mm-hmm.
So as much as I love the soundtrack, it kind of got to me because of the limitations of the gameplay by the end of the game.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'd say the thing that held up the least for me is in the same vein, the whole restarting song thing, because this game is like about developing perfectionism. And when you go back to something like Final Fantasy games on the PlayStation 1, you had the song in the overworld, you would go to a battle, but then once you came back to the overworld, the song picked up right from where it left off. Now, I don't know if you guys know about this, and it's fascinating because it's a contextual piece for everybody listening and watching. Like, right now on the Switch, we have Final Fantasy 9 and 7 is going to be coming out. And the complaint that you have about Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 is the one that everybody has about that emulated version. Because think about that you mentioned, Keith. Every time that you finish a battle in Final Fantasy 9 right now on the Switch, the song in the world restarts.
Oh, that so sounds like saying, hell.
So imagine you always listen to like the first 20 to 30 seconds of that song over.
Well, I was
going to
buy
over.
That version, but no thanks. Yep, thank you for saving me 14 bucks.
I was on the same boat. And it lets you know, like, for somebody that maybe grew up in, I don't know, like the Atari era, I don't want to call you guys old, but this may sound like a first world problem. I only get to listen to the first 30 seconds of a song, but that's a big portion of the game. So having that be removed or restarted over and over, it breaks that immersion. And the thing that I quickly wanted to ask you guys is, what do you think about the unlockables? I mean, Neversoft also made the Spider-Man game. So people like Spider-Man, and Keith, your favorite character is Officer?
Officer Dick, baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These games were notorious for unlockables and cheats and stuff like that. How important is that in the Tony Hawk series for you guys?
Oh, they just add a whole new dynamic to the game of fun. Because once you get good at the game and you kind of start going through everybody's career mode and it starts feeling repetitive, that's when they start throwing these amazing unlocks at you. Like Officer Dick, what a great character. And then once you get Spider-Man unlocked, and in the later Tony Hawk games, they always had that crazy unlock. Like there was Darth Maul and Wolverine at another point. Boba
Fett.
Anyone?
Yeah.
I think so. Then and then that's when they have these over the top special moves as well. Like it adds a whole different style to the game as you get better and better, and then you get the crazy levels that go along with it. Like we didn't really talk about it because it's not much part of the career mode, but the best level in the game is probably Skater Heaven, just from how vast and crazy and unique that everything in that level is. And then when you start throwing in like low gravity mode and stuff like that, things get crazy on Skater Heaven. I love the unlocks in the game. They just add so much life to it.
Yeah, I agree. Spider-Man was really sweet. The fact that he has his own skate video at the end, which is pretty funny. Even Officer Dick has his own video. So there's so much to unlock. And yeah, like Keith said, you get Skater Heaven, which is just super sweet. They throw in all the bells and whistles. You get this like perfect circular tunnel thing, which I couldn't figure out how to do the full loop. I think you need like a ridiculous amount of speed to be able to do it.
Yeah.
But that was super sweet. And then they had that weird, like you said, Hawaii half pipe level where you at the end try and make that leap to the finish line. So there was nothing. This game was not short on unlockables for sure. And each one is pretty tough to do because I think to get Skater's Heaven, I think you had to 100% every single character or something like that. So it's pretty ridiculous, and it was pretty demanding. So luckily, they got the unlock everything cheat, which is what I did this time it's around, great. And what I did as a kid. Because guess what? I ain't doing that. I ain't unlocking
exactly,
everything.
That's part of it. Same thing with GTA. And nowadays, DLC has unfortunately sort of taken over what used to be cheats. So now, as we start to wind down, this is going to be a very hard question to answer. Maybe an easy one, but something that none of us ideally would have liked to have gone through. When did you guys think you started to fall off the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater bandwagon in any of the iterations? We talked about the fact that Neversoft less developed the game in 2007. Which was the first game that you played and went, ugh, like something's not clicking here. And if this keeps happening, it's going to be a good game for everybody.
Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 was exactly when it happened. Like I mentioned earlier, when there was that increase in the popularity of Jackass and the Tony Hawk games tried to match it, that's when it kind of got to be a too much for me.
You mean Underground? Underground 2?
Yeah, Tony Hawk Underground 2. Sorry.
Yeah.
And you could start seeing the beginning of that happening in Thug 1, but they really took it to a whole another level in Thug 2, as to the point where I never finished that game. I just got tired of it. It's like, I think I'm done. So, yeah, and after that, I haven't touched a single one of them, because I heard they just got worse and worse and worse, and Tony Hawk Ride is on a whole different level of its own. So, yeah, that was kind of the taking Tony Hawk behind the barn moment for me.
Sorry, Tony. So I would say that it was weird because I was super into, I think I burnt myself out on Tony Hawk 3 because I played both the PS1 version and then rented and played the heck out of the GameCube version. So I completely skipped Tony Hawk 4, which people say is one of the best ones. I've never played that game, except for maybe like a couple minutes of it at a friend's house. But then I did, of course, play Tony Hawk's Underground 1, and that was the last in the series that I completely beat. I played Underground 2 at a friend's house, and I was just kind of like, eh, I wasn't super impressed with it. And then I really didn't come. I haven't bought a game in the series since. It really wasn't till Skate came out that I found interest in a skateboarding game again.
Yeah, for me, it had to have been Tony Hawk's Underground 2 for the same reasons that you mentioned, Keith, because I think that Underground, the first one, is the one that I played the most, especially with the online, because my favorite game mode was not in the second one, which is the tag one. Where, you know, you grind and the things take your color. Like that, I love playing that. I was always bad at the combos at like high numbers, but I love playing that. But the moment that I put the Thug 2 is like, oh, okay, so now it's like a Jackass game featuring a skateboarding game. And even in like 4 and Thug 1, it was kinda in that zone, but they made the full transition. And then to after that, see like the transition to like the newer consoles and Project 8. And it just seems like they could never really get their feet wet with like a proper video game development. Like, let's be real. These games were never pretty to look at. Graphically speaking, they always seemed inferior to other games coming out around that time. So especially when they switched to like 360, you could tell like Neversoft, maybe it's time you take a break because it feels like you're working on this so much. You know, we're big wrestling fans, and it was the same thing in the WWE games, which is like, take a year off. And they never did. They never did. And I guess like it doesn't matter how creative you are, ideas eventually run out, and it definitely felt like
eventually
with American
run
Wasteland,
into the ground, much like Guitar Hero and other yearly franchises.
Unfortunately. So that is the negative thing. What would you say is the legacy that Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 left for everybody? Is it the memorable soundtrack? Is it laying the better and improved foundation for future iterations? Is it the interest for skating as a whole or skating games? Starting with Ryan, what is that for you?
I would say that the legacy of Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 is really setting the stage for what an extreme sport video game should be and how to make it fun, you know, with the soundtrack, with the super fun gameplay. I mean, it really set the stage. There's a Matt Hoffman BMX demo in this game because we got other extreme sport video games because of this. And it did help really set the stage for what eventually became an awesome skateboarding game later down the line in Skate. And I think people are still waiting for a new version of that game. So it really did set the stage for not only the extreme sport scene for video games, but bringing extreme sports back to the forefront for a lot of kids growing up and taking interest in skateboarding in that time. So it not only encouraged them to enjoy the game, but also to go outside and try it yourself.
I agree. I think Tony Hawk's legacy is just this perfect encapsulation of the skate culture of the late 90s, how you can, even though they're terrible to look at now, you can watch those old videos that the game has and just see what skater culture was back then, how it was extreme, quote unquote, but didn't take itself too seriously, where it liked to joke around, especially in those like Officer Dick and those Neversoft Bale videos. You can just see what everything about the culture, the music that the soundtrack has. It really encapsulates what skater music was back in the 90s. You have the levels like Venice that really encapsulates that feel of being a skater and the type of areas that people would turn into skate parks in the late 90s. Just everything that Tony Hawk 2 does is just this perfect timepiece of skateboard culture from the late 90s. And if you want to remember, remind yourself, learn about it, you have to look no further than Tony Hawk 2.
Yeah, for me, I think the most important thing is also the technological aspect, because remember that nowadays, anybody that is listening to this, and I guarantee you at least a couple of people are going to do this, they're going to finish listening to the episode, they're going to leave the 5-star review on your preferred podcast platform, but yeah, then you're going to go to Spotify, and you're going to search Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 soundtrack, and guess what? There's not an official one, but somebody built it. Back in the day, you had these things called mixed tapes. I don't know if you guys have heard about that. Or these Walkmans that people would get CDRs, and they would burn the soundtrack. And
or,
I remember in
or
school.
You got this. Back in the day, PS1 game, literally you pop that sucker in a CD player.
It's true.
It
yeah.
starts playing
the
damn
soundtrack.
How about that?
That was
really
like the biggest
the most
revelation.
Value.
Yeah,
it's
I remember
like
doing
the most
that with
value
Twisted
ever.
Metal. I was like,
right. Do you know, this is sad. You know the first game that I did that with?
What, like Croc 2?
So unnecessary.
Legend of Legaia.
No. But the soundtrack is similar. Age of Empires 2. So like a super relaxed soundtrack.
Just
and
the
I'm like
sound of horns?
Out.
Like the
or
PC
disc? What was that?
Yeah, the PC
disc. It works
disc.
For PC. I didn't know it worked for PC games,
yeah.
too.
For some of the games that had MP3 tracks or WMA, depending on your CD player on your car. CD players, for those listening, is the thing that you would put discs in. It's so sad that we're making fun of this, but we're getting to that point, guys.
I mean, there's
guys.
Blu-ray. People know, like, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, but I just love that. Just figuring out, I love this about this game. How can I extract that to listen to it in the car? Or we can get creative like with Ryan did with that. So, people, that has been it for our Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 episode. How do you guys feel beginning with Keith after having had this productive conversation. Do you feel happy we finally got a chance to talk about this classic game?
I do, and I just really enjoyed going back and reliving such a important game to my childhood. And yeah, it makes me excited for covering Tony Hawk games in the future.
Yeah, this one, when we decided that we were going to do it, this was the one I was least intimidated by, because I was like, you know what? It's Tony Hawk. I know I can get through this game. Although it definitely took a little bit longer to get through than I was expecting, and it was a little bit more frustrating than I was expecting. Still, though, I knew it was a game I could go back to, and I knew it was going to be a good time. So I was pretty happy to go back and play it.
Yeah, same here. And I guess it's also worth pointing out, I don't know if you guys know this, but there's a new Tony Hawk game out that's out for, I think it's iOS.
Yes.
And yeah, Giant Bomb. Everybody go to YouTube if you want to know about this. Just look up Giant Bomb, Tony Hawk, iOS Quick Look or something like that. It's going to show up. I saw it. It's trying. It is trying to
be
this.
That is the best thing that you can say about that game. It's yeah. Doing its best.
You get the solid bronze medal for attempting to recreate magic, but
wouldn't even give it that.
Yeah, no, not that. But for everybody watching and listening, we talked about a game that came out in the year 2000. Which other game from this year do you guys think we should cover, or a movie that would be fascinating to compare things like this? Definitely let us know. Don't be afraid to send an email, acastofthepast@gmail.com. Also, we have a Discord channel. We recently had a bit of a makeover. We've streamlined it. We realized it kind of sucked the way it was laid out. It was very complicated.
Yeah,
we had a WrestleMania thing talking about Raw. We had the Resident Evil 2 thing talking about the remake and then other things. It didn't make any sense. So, Keith, you cleared that up, man.
Yep.
Good job.
I took the axe. I chopped everything away, chopped off a few heads. Now it's all pretty. My kill rooms turned into a beautiful love room. And we're excited to have you join us in my love room.
Yes, acastofthepast.com/discord is where you can join Keith's love room. This is where also we can just shoot the breeze about random topics here. And yeah, don't be afraid to leave a review. But before we close things off, we always like to let you guys know some of the upcoming episodes. So, Mr. McNulty, what are some of them?
All right, well, coming up next, we had our first freeform episode. We're dubbing these Off the Rails, where it's literally no agenda, no format. In fact, we all went in with things in mind that we were going to talk about, and we talked about none of those things.
None of them.
Yep. Not a single one.
Mm-hmm. What I can tell you is we ended up talking a lot about pizza and arcade games, and you'll be able to watch that on March 3rd. Coming up after that, we've got Captain America on March 10th. And now, what year did that come out, Juan? Do you know off the top of your head?
That came out 2000. Keith, could you look that up? I think it's around 2000.
Hashtag fact checked.
2010? I'm just randomly saying a year. It feels like a 2010 movie because obviously we're using this because Captain Marvel, that's going to be coming out. And we had an internal conversation about which are some of the key Marvel movies that we love.
2011.
Hey,
okay.
I wasn't too far.
Not bad. I just want to clarify that because there is like a really old Captain America movie. So I want to let everyone know this is
the
2011.
First Captain America of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yes.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
Yeah, this is the most recent thing we've ever covered on the show. But
yes, for sure.
2011, that's a couple years ago already.
Yeah, it's still 8 years ago. So there you go.
Damn.
Then we will have another short kind of 0.5 edition episode coming up on March 17th. More details to be announced in the future. And then finally, as this was a video game episode, we like to let you guys know what the next video game is going to be. It's going to be a fan favorite, one that definitely deserves a re-release, remake, or completely new iteration. Pokemon Snap, we're going to be covering that March 24th.
Yeah, so take out those cameras, find those Pikachus, and take some pictures. Give them the old snap at that Pikachu.
Throw an apple and take a picture.
Yeah, pelt it
in
the head.
Yes.
Think about how many kids play Pokemon Go and have no idea what Pokemon Snap is and
it
how much
be
better
so
it
perfect.
Is.
It's so perfect for today's
perfect.
Generation. It's perfect
it's
for the
for
Switch.
It.
Like, it's perfect for everything.
So hopefully we will be able to talk about that one, the remake. It's going to happen. This podcast will live. It will live. This podcast will cease to exist when the Pokemon Snap HD remaster comes out.
Like it's like the second most demanded remake or second edition compared to Simpsons Hit and Run. Every week on Reddit, somebody has to mention Simpsons Hit and Run.
Really?
Yeah. Seriously, every single week, Keith? I see that.
Keith? I never played much of it, to be honest.
Is Hit and Run the crazy taxi clone?
No, Hit and Run was the GTA clone.
Oh, no, I never played that one.
Okay.
I barely played it. I was always just right to GTA. I was like, I don't need any substitute for it.
Road Rage.
That's it. I played a lot of that one, and it was pretty good, but no, I never played Hit and Run.
And I think we need to add that at some point during the year.
Definitely.
So we can cover it on another exciting episode of A Cast
to the Past.
Guys, I think that was by far.
That was smooth. That was smooth. I was waiting for the second you said it.
Yeah, that's always say like another exciting episode. That's like my way of letting you guys know, hey, warm up the vocals. It's going to be happening. And then we unleash it to the world. Take care, everybody.